So as I mentioned yesterday, one of the main reasons that we don't own our own death, one of the main reasons, if not the main reason, but I'll say just to cover myself, one of the main reasons we don't own, is our inability to work with and view subtle impermanence. Yeah, subtle impermanence. We have, I think I've never met anyone that doesn't have an understanding of ordinary impermanence. And most people who have had any form of education have an intellectual understanding of subtle impermanence. But we don't tend to work with that. That doesn't tend to affect our lives. And the reality is where you focus, really. William James said that, and I think that's true, where you focus. So if we continue to focus on impermanence on a very gross level, that will be our reality, and nothing will impinge on that. Nothing. So both subtle and gross impermanence are true, but only one will lead you towards owning your own death. So if we're thinking about gross impermanence, what type of things are we talking about? The ordinary, and I'm talking about, by I say gross, I mean ordinary, kind of ordinary mind. Everybody kind of sees this type of impermanence. So just think for a minute, if you were to identify four things in this world that's from an ordinary mind, from a gross mind that's impermanent, what would you come up with? For instance, I've taught a lot in prisons, eh? And when we talk about impermanence, we talk about gross impermanence. To get them on side, I get them to say, what do they see that's impermanent? You know, and sometimes it takes them a while, because a lot of the education knowledge is not there. But they tend to come up with stuff that is impermanent, and this is a very good way for them to start. So what type of things do we see as grossly impermanent?
It's hard to say, isn't it? Because it's all to do with life and death in a way.
It is. But I want you to think specifically, just this one question. What do you see around you?
Decay.
With a nod of decay. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, a building?
Yeah, fruit.
Fruit? What other things would you say was ordinary impermanence that we tend to say, I know about. Remember we say things like, I know about impermanence, what are you talking about? I know everything is impermanent. I didn't come all the way here for a weekend to hear this.
A storm,
okay. It's got a beginning, middle and end, seemingly. Okay, what else is impermanent?
Bodies.
Money is certainly impermanent with me. Anyone else?
Bodies
seem to be impermanent. This is unreasonable. Anything else?
Seasons,
certainly. Seasons. Definitely impermanent. What else?
Cars,
definitely impermanent, yes.
Water in a puddle,
okay. So, from a Buddhist point of view, looking at impermanence from a philosophical point of view, you can say that all conditioned phenomena that's brought about through causes and conditions are impermanent. You can say that. That's reasonable. That's a reasonable statement. Now, if we focus on that every time we say, yes, life is impermanent, and I understand impermanence, because look, you can see it all around you. If that's your main focus, then that has consequences. One of the consequences is, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but we tend to see this type of impermanence as having some sort of permanence within the impermanence. There seems to be a time when it is kind of static, it's permanent. It seems to be like that. It seems to be also, another consequence is that If you focus in this way on impermanence in an ordinary mind, then the consequence tends to be that impermanence comes about through external conditions. You know, fruit will decay because of atmosphere and whatever insects, you know, it's you know, like that. You can say buildings will collapse because of the weather, because, you know, something crashes. And we all have this idea, most people can remember when the planes flew into the Twin Towers. In a way, that's a perfect metaphor for how we tend to think about impermanence, as if external conditions cause the impermanence. That's ordinary mind. Is there truth in it? Absolutely. There's truth in it, of course. Grossly. So, if that's how we tend to focus, now not talking about intellectual understanding now, but just how we tend to view things, if we see it as having some sort of momentary time when it's okay, permanent, static, if we tend to see it that it comes about from external conditions generally, you know, you're quite happy with that. What's the consequences of thinking like this and focusing like that? What do you think? If you see the cause as external, what do you see as the cure? Tends to be external. This is why we work very hard to control external environment. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't work hard to control your external environment. Okay, do that. But don't think it'll work to any degree, any subtle degree. It'll work on a gross level. But do you see what I'm saying here? If you really think that there is a kind of permanence within this gross impermanence, this ordinary mind, and that change comes from the outside, then a lot of our efforts will be focused externally to deal with it. It makes sense. Why would you do anything else? Does that make sense? And it's how we tend to see things. It's as if we see things like a snapshot in time. And then we hold on to that snapshot as if it's permanent. It's like knowing a friend, right? And then you meet them 10 years later and you think, what happened to you? You know? Personally, I'm like that every time I look in the mirror. But still, you know, what happened? Because we tend to think there was a time when she was like this, and there must have been a time when she was like that. And now the time has come that she's like this. Right? Mm-hmm. Same with a building. Perfect. You could pass the building every day, and you think, oh, it's gorgeous. You know, it's new, it's solid, it's in the landscape. A bit like the tower in London, the towers, you know, Grenfell Towers. You know, it's, you know, I've been looking at it for years, you know, no problem. Then one day, a fire comes and it falls down. External conditions, yes? Mm. This is the type of impermanence we hold on to. Now, if we keep focusing like that and thinking of that as impermanent, we will put all our efforts to controlling external conditions. And that makes sense to it. That would make sense. But that won't lead you anywhere near understanding what impermanence means in relation to owning your own death. Nowhere. So now we look at a more subtle level. And this is when, this is not the ordinary mind now. This is a mind of intelligence, that's putting that intelligence into use. So first of all, good to look for a definition. So a definition of impermanence within the Buddhist construct would be that which is momentary. That which is momentary. Okay? And that's Dharmakirti's definition, and it's a good one. And what is this subtle impermanence about? It's about, if you have moments in time, let's say the first moment in time and a second moment, right? It's looking at between the first and the second moment, change is already occurring. Even between these two moments in time, change is going on. There's no space in between the first moment in time and the second moment in time where things are static, where things are unchanging. There's a pool of stasis. No. Between the first and second moment of time, or the first and second moment of anything, there is continuous change. There is no space between the first and second moment where no change is taking place. That's subtle impermanence. And more than that, from the beginning, from the very, very whisper of a moment, for the whisper of that moment, to the end of that first moment, there's no stasis. There's no static. It is continuously changing from the moment of creation. Not a second later. Not a fraction of a second later. From the moment of creation of that moment, there is change. There is change. If there is change at the very whisper, the very beginning, the birth of a moment, there is change. What are we saying? We're really saying that change and impermanence is its nature. Its very nature is change. Its very nature is impermanent. And this is what we have to grasp onto. Its very nature. Look at the difference. If we have an ordinary mind, a gross mind with permanence, we're looking at things that, okay, it's there and it's there for a while, and then something happens and it falls down or it changes. Yes? So there's something in there that we see, or even if we don't think it, we kind of feel there's some sort of permanence in there. Maybe it doesn't last very long, but it's there. Right? And then it really requires something external to change it. Now what are we saying about subtle impermanence? We're saying that between the first and the second moment, there's no stasis. There's no static. There's no unchanging. There is changing between the first and second moment. More than that, we're saying from the birth of that first moment to the end of that first moment, if you can think about that, there is change. And if you're saying that, then really what you're saying is by its very nature, conditioned phenomena, all conditioned phenomena, are impermanent. Now, if we can start seeing that and acting within that, then we're close to owning our own death. Now, intellectually, most people that I meet know this. I mean, this is not new. In any type of physics, any type of scientific inquiry that you've ever engaged in will tell you that. This floor appears solid. But what's its nature? What's the nature of that? Is there anything in that floor that's permanent, that is unchanging, right now? No. I was teaching prisoners this, the difference between gross and impermanent. Because they were studying Buddhism. It wasn't just for meditation. And the educational level is not high. And there was one guy saying, well, what do you mean? He said, are you meaning that this floor is impermanent? I'm saying, yes. And he said, well, does that mean that if I came in with an axe, I won't tell you what he was in for, but if you come in with an axe and hit that floor, it would be, I said, yes. But subtle impermanence means by its nature, all conditioned phenomena, everything that's been brought together to function, all conditioned phenomena, by its nature. And he went, oh, so it's really whizzing. I said, it's whizzing about, whizzing about. He said, well, what about this chair? Same thing. So the chair's whizzing about. Yes. And he said, what about me? And he was really trying to think this through. He said, well, what about me? I said, you're whizzing about. He says, what about everything? They're all whizzing about. Oh, dear Lord, you could see him looking. See, we don't see that. What we see is a permanent floor, permanent people around us, and very definitely permanent me. And if I ever think that I'm impermanent and this floor's impermanent, what do I think? I think something will happen to it externally that will make it impermanent. Now, we need to let go of that mind. It's true. But now let go of that. Let's focus on the subtle impermanence. By its very nature, it's changing. Imagine if you could really focus on that and see that as you go about your day. You see, we go about our day, we don't say that floor is permanent. We don't say, this, we don't do that. But instinctively, that's what we hold. This is our ignorance. We hold on to this. We've got to reverse that now. We've got to reverse it. And a step towards that is, yes, seeing the impermanent nature of all things grossly. But if you really want to start owning death, well, actually owning anything, you've got to really see the impermanent nature of it. Just think for that a minute. See if there's any questions for that.
I think in relationship, sometimes if you have a disagreement, if you don't end the day, well, this was something that we did in our family, it seemed to work because of considering this mm-hmm. sort of thing, was that we'd always sort of have a peaceful exchange before we went to bed,
yes,
just in case
yes.
anything happened,
yes.
and you had left in turmoil.
Yes. This is therapy.
Mm.
This is therapy. And therapy is good, isn't it?
Mm.
It's also external. It's good. It works. Who wouldn't do this if it works?
Mm.
But this is this is a much deeper level. This is much deeper level. Much deeper even than that. Because that's still relying on external stuff. It's asking nothing less than seeing reality, a wee bit of reality, this impermanence. And if you can start seeing things in this way, I mean, I said before when we were doing bodhicitta, when I was doing emptiness, but it's true. The best companion, your best buddy, whenever you're looking at difficult topics like death, emptiness, is understanding impermanence, trying to work with it. Subtle impermanence.
Yes.
You're right, what you're saying, it's not incorrect,
mm.
but it's on a level. You keep that going because that works. But now we're talking about something more now. We're just going right down. And from a Buddhist point of view, the definition you have to keep in your mind, something like impermanence is that which is momentary. Momentary. Remembering that from first moment to the second moment, it's changing. From the birth of its first moment to the end of that first moment, it's changing. Why? Because it's its nature.
There was a little phrase that came up once upon a time, change is the only constant.
Yes.
And I found that quite helpful.
It is.
I think.
It is. And it is important, and it's good to think like that. I know I keep saying, but to own it, it has to be personal. What we tend to do when we see things, people say they don't mind change. That's not what I've noticed throughout my life. Throughout my life, I see people like things to go along basically the same way. They don't like change that much. And they don't like change within themselves either. So you've got to see it. You've got to see it happening within yourself and within your interaction with the world around you. To own it. And that's not how we see it. It really isn't. Even if we intellectually know all the epistemological definitions, all the word coding that goes with it, really understand the philosophical basis, we wake up, come out of meditation, everything seems solid.
Mm-hmm.
It just stems. It just, you're solid, I'm solid, my coffee is solid, you know, everything's solid. You have to, it's something not just here. You have to start meditating on it. You've got to actively see, actively use it. Don't be fooled. In this weekend, everything you see, that you see, and you do see as permanent, don't be fooled. Start to mistrust what you see. Mistrust it.
Yeah.
Not sure. Mistrust of what you see around you is very useful. Very useful. You don't have to go broadcasting it around the place, but just don't be fooled. This illusion that we see is, has it got a grip through reincarnation, through lifetime after lifetime? This is not something that's going to be easily shifted with knowledge. It can be shifted through experience. But your experience depends on you understanding it. So not, you don't throw away the knowledge. But knowledge will give you a firm basis, but only by using that, getting the experience of it, that you'll see the change.
Mary, is this like a parallel, a subtle impermanence with like particle physics?
Oh, yes. Yes. In fact, His Holiness has many discourses with physicists on these topics. You see, what this is not, you know, a Buddhist idea. It is as it is. The Buddha didn't make this up. I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach this because, well, you know, it's true. But if I teach this, I'll lead my followers to the... It wasn't this. It's a recognition. He recognized it. He experienced it. He saw the world as it was. And if you deal with the world as it is, then the benefits are quite strong. But it does take courage. I think it takes courage to do that. So really, I'm not surprised it's like particle physics. I mean, on several exchanges, you know, the physicists will say to His Holiness, how do you know that without studying physics? And His Holiness will say, how do you know that without studying Buddhism? You know, it's not that reality changes if you're a Buddhist or reality changes if you're a physicist. It's not about that. It's about discovering what is. And the Buddhist path is about discovering what is. You don't have to believe anything like that. Once you know it works, why would you bother believing it? It just is. And that's what this subtle encounter is. Because your reality is where you focus. Focus on that. Change your view of reality. Because the benefits are huge. What do you think the benefits might be if you started maybe not seeing it, because I could think that would be quite... you know, disturbing sometimes, but imagine that you started to see things as impermanent. And I'm not just talking physical continuum, although that's important, but also mental continuum is impermanent. This moment mind is an impermanent phenomena. Okay? So what do you think the benefits would be of this?
It's quite reassuring. Quite reassuring.
For some people, not for all people. I've taught people this, and we've discussed and been in classes with teachers that have taught this, and it's frightened the pants off people.
It means things also go.
Yes.
So
yes.
States of mind come and go.
Yeah. And more importantly, so do I.
Yes.
And everything that makes up me. So what could be the consequences of starting to see things as they are, which is what impermanence is leading you to?
If your mind would be less cluttered and more open.
Yes. Why?
Because you wouldn't have a preconceived and sort of permanent, I know what this is,
yes.
Sort of behaviour.
Yes. Yeah. Now, for some people, that's very liberating. Mm. For other people, frightening. You have to, you need to know that. What else would be... Because there's no use thinking like this if it's not going to be beneficial, eh?
Does it lead to less grasping?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. What is there to grasp on?
Because there's... It's
no.
No.
Yeah.
Well, it allows you to change, and other people, like, say if you get a fixed idea that somebody is a certain way, or that you are a certain way, you know that that's not... permanent thing.
No.
Yeah.
No. Not even for a moment to moment is that true. But there's habit of thinking that way.
Mm.
There's a strong habit of thinking that way, but it's not true.
Mm-hmm. So that could make you more compassionate?
It can certainly do. I believe that's the case. I believe, and I'll tell you why I think that's the case, because if you start owning that and seeing it within yourself. And I know people say, oh, well, I can see that. So, but really bring it in. Bring it home. Bring it home. See it within yourself, mentally and physically. And I think you start being compassionate towards yourself in a really healing way. Really healing. And once you're compassionate with yourself, you really got a good chance of being authentically compassionate with others. And it's not the case of saying, you know, how many people have you heard say things like, I'm very compassionate with this person, but I'm hard on myself. Excuse me, what? What is this?
It is the most difficult thing to be compassionate to yourself.
You see, some people find, I've never found that hard. No. You're probably a nicer person than me, but no. I don't think that's true. I mean, from my point of view, certainly not. Not the way I was brought up. Of course, you have to know what compassion means. That's important.
Yes.
I haven't got time to do that now. But you've got to know what that means. It's not just giving yourself everything you want. But being compassionate with yourself. If you can't do that, that's why you start with yourself. If you can't do that, how are you going to do it with other people? You'll do something. But how effective will it be? Yeah. By seeing subtle impermanence, you've got a chance there of understanding that you are an impermanent phenomena, always changing. You've got a chance at that. Understanding how the mind works that way, that moment-to-moment mind, the moment-to-moment physical continuum. If you've got that, then you've got a chance of attacking and really working and getting rid of the strong sense of I, this permanent idea of I. Now, if you can start bringing this permanent idea up in I as me, I, mine, like this, and really looking at it with subtle impermanence, it kind of has got nothing to hold on to. And if that's the case, then self-grasping hasn't got much of a chance. And self-grasping is your main problem, self-grasping and self-cherishing. Because this becomes, if there's I, then there's me and there's mine. And there's me and there's you. And this is mine and this is mine and this is mine. It's not yours, it's mine. So this distance grows and grows and grows. But if you're looking at things with subtle impermanence, and suddenly this I is not as solid as you thought. The idea of self-grasping is not as reasonable as you would think. And if self-grasping doesn't hold, then the idea of hurting others, the idea of behaving in such a way to cause negative karma, doesn't have much of a hold. Why? Because ideas and heavy negative emotions, such as grasping, aversion, doesn't have a strong hold because the ignorance is not there. And if you've not got these strong emotions of grasping and aversion, the chances of you creating negative karma are reduced. If you reduce your creation of negative karma, then you reduce the suffering of yourself and everybody around you. If you do that, you stop putting negative karma on the mind stream that will ripen later so that you suffer all over again. Take it right back to the beginning. And really it's all about ignorance. It's all about ignorance. And to start to look at ignorance properly, you have to look at impermanence. And in relation to death and owning it, seeing yourself as impermanent can really give yourself real compassion. You start doing for yourself things that are useful, things that are helpful to you, things that are kind, things that are gentle. You stop being so harsh with yourself. And when you stop being harsh with yourself, the chances of you stopping being harsh with others are quite strong. If you stop getting angry with yourself, the chances of you not being angry with others are quite high. And then the distance between you and me Yes. Anyway, it's a thought.
I was just wondering. In the Tibetan tradition, do children taught this from a very early age?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I believe so. Having said that, I don't think it's, in many cases, it's not taught formally. It's not taught formally. We're very lucky. It's like any way of thinking. Every, you can call it a religion, I suppose. But anything like that, it really depends. I mean, I've been in Tibetan communities where, you know, they live, it's just in their, it's, they live compassionately. They wouldn't think of living any other way. However, they will make mistakes and do stuff. And they call upon, they only get teachings when somebody's dying, really. You know, they call upon the Lama as and when. Really, this form, or if you're in a monastery and you're a monk. But the majority that I've met in Tibetan communities, they don't go for teachings like this so much. I sometimes think they start with it, they've got a head start, but from a Western point of view, we're more likely to own our own dharma, I think.
So it's a bit like, you know, if you grew up in a Christian tradition and you just went to church and then you know, you got the vicar in when someone was dying,
yeah,
to bit like your Catholic for confession, and it's kind of a ritual and a tradition, but they might not.
Yeah, but yeah, that's partly true. But also, what I've noticed is that it seems to be inbred in the bone, in the Tibetan,
right,
community.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of compassion, this type of helping. It doesn't mean to say they've not got bad points. Believe me, they do. We all do. But there's something in the bone. I mean, you are talking about people that had no written language until they decided to study dharma. You know. They only developed a written language so they could study dharma. I mean, you're talking about commitment on a vast scale. And going from a warrior race that were feared by the Russians, feared by the Chinese, feared by the Mongols, to what they are now, in a very short space of time. Amazing. Okay. So, let's get ourselves settled. And let's try and bring what we've discussed, what you've thought about, into this meditation. Now, as you all know, you need to, when you're doing the analytical part of the meditation, that's when you're thinking about it, you're bringing experiences in, you're almost like a mental study as I lead you through this meditation. But they'll come to a point, hopefully, they might do, come to a point where something positive arises in your mind. It could be something reasonable, this seems reasonable, or I will definitely do this, or a kind of joyful feeling, a kind of recognition that this is true. Any of these things happen, then leave off the analytical, stop it, okay? Whatever I'm saying, just tune me out. And try to hold on to that feeling, that experience, that understanding, anything that comes up that's positive in this area. Does that make sense? That single point of concentration, you want to let go of the chatting. See, analysis will get you to a certain point, but it doesn't change your mind. What changes your mind is your ability to focus. Okay. Don't worry if you don't get... Don't go there because, is it now? Or is that good enough? Did she say a feeling? Well, you know, nothing like that. Just let it go smoothly. Let it go smoothly. And if you get some sort of positive feeling about this, and it seems reasonable, or some sort of aha moment, or then just leave, just let it, all the talk, the mental chatter go. And just be with that. That will change your mind. Okay? Okay, so getting yourself into a comfortable position. And using the two-breath method as before. Interestingly, if you practice the meditation that we did this morning about, or any type of meditation that helps you relax, if you practice that often enough, then simply by doing this two-breath method, you'll be able to get to the same state. You don't have to take that length of time to do it. But you need to get your mind habituated to it. So just using the two-breath, if you remember breathing deeply in through the nostrils, allowing the belly to fill, and then out through pursed lips on a long out-breath, and in that long out-breath, letting the whole body simply relax. And do that twice, and then breathe normally. So in your own time. So consider this idea of impermanence is like a journey. A journey from a gross understanding of impermanence towards the more subtle, actual impermanence. If we make this journey, what will we notice? Well, one of the first things we may notice is a reduced disparity between what we know and how we behave. Generally, there's a huge disparity between our intellectual understanding of how things are and how we behave within the world. Working with subtle impermanence reduces that disparity between what we intellectually understand and how we behave. Consider now that all the physical world, all the conditioned phenomena, all of it is impermanent, constantly changing. Some things are obvious on a gross level. People, buildings, seasons. But perhaps that's not true. So in your mind, question that. Is it true that all the physical world is impermanent and constantly changing? Can you find one thing, one piece of phenomena, conditioned phenomena in this world that isn't? Don't just say no. Look, search. Maybe there's one thing hiding somewhere that is permanent. Now, apart from what's observable, all physical components are constantly changing. At a cellular and molecular level, is there anything in our physical continuum that is static? For the briefest moment, is there anything? Any systems of the body, any organs, any tissues, any cells, any fluid, any molecule, any atom? Can you find anything that isn't constantly changing? Try to get a feel of that. Bring to mind, let's say, a building that you know well. Bring it to mind now. Fast forward this image until there is nothing left but dust. Fast forward it. Bring the image back. Recognize that what we are seeing is a mere snapshot in time. We make this image concrete, and we grasp at it as real, as have something permanent about it, this mere snapshot in time. Ignoring, avoiding, not seeing the ever-flowing nature of it. It's nature. Bring back the snapshot in time. Is it true that we prefer to see this and believe in this concrete image? Why do we believe in this concrete image that does not exist? Has never existed. Will never exist. We know that on an invisible level, there's minute particles constantly coming in and out of existence, gathering, dispersing, always in motion, always fluctuating. We know that's true. through habit, we cling and grasp to the concrete snapshot. Something that does not exist. In the way we perceive it to exist. Now bring to mind an object that you are very fond of. Could be your car, mobile phone, iPod, I don't know. But bring to mind, make it clear in your mind now. Really focus on it. How does that object appear to you? How does it appear? Does it appear permanent or impermanent? Despite our intellectual understanding, there appears to be a kind of permanence somewhere about this object. Even if that permanence is for a certain space of time. Seems to be something permanent within that object. A power that holds it steady for a length of time. This appearance of permanence is a hallucination. It's like a frozen image, a snapshot frozen in time. This hallucination is the basis of all our suffering. Why? Because without control, we hallucinate all the time. We engage with objects and people as if they were permanent or had some form of permanence about them. We then grasp, cherish, as if it's reality. Get upset when it finally, you can see the impermanence. Now, with your frozen object that you have in your mind now, something you're very fond of, unfreeze the image and see the flow of its true nature, ever changing. And ask yourself, what is there to grasp at? If we can reduce and eliminate the hallucination of some form of permanence. We allow ourselves to become familiar with the transitory nature of all things. And we move from just accepting change as it appears to us to accepting and expecting change as its nature. Become aware. Bring your attention inwards. Become aware of the different parts of your body. Its shape, size, texture, the movement of blood, of breath. Go deeper. Feel your cells moving, changing, expanding, contracting. Once you feel that, expand your awareness to everyone and everything in this room. Recognize the hallucination of some form of permanence. And with your imagination, let that give way to the true nature of everything in this room. And reflect, everything that I experience with my senses exists in this way. Say that to yourself a few times and then sit with it. Consider my mind, composed of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of emotions, thoughts, constantly changing, an ever-flowing mental movement, bored, enjoying, happy, unhappy, in love, have anger, memories, ideas, old judgments, past conversations, crowding my mind, constantly changing. And it's almost like an internal battle. We have no problem understanding intellectually that this is true. But real acceptance can be very difficult. And we can begin to see that our intellectual understanding of how things are does not inform how we behave. There's the disparity. We cling and grasp without any choice, really, at the moment, that things are permanent. This is how things are. This is how I am. As if they're true and unchanging. And we behave that way. So please mentally fill in the gaps. So if I say, I am. If you say that, what words do you put there? I am. Continuing to fill in the gaps. I always. I never. I like. I dislike. I believe. In any of your answers, is there a sense of flow? Or is there more a sense of solidity? Permanent, static? Ask yourself. Can you see that the hallucination of any type of permanence brings suffering and a kind of suffocation? It's a straitjacket. We're becoming familiar with the ever-flowing change in nature. The subtle impermanence brings freedom and choice. Try to come to some conclusion here. And if you get a strong positive feeling or a conclusion or some understanding, calm the mind and hold it. Just be with it. Thank you. So for the rest of the weekend, how do you see things? That's what you see. But there has to be a benefit. You won't do otherwise. See the benefit. At the moment, maybe impermanence doesn't feel like freedom and choice. Maybe permanence feels safe. That's what you have to challenge. Okay? So in groups of three, I'd like you to discuss how that went. What went well, what didn't go well. Okay? Listen to each other. See how that went. Because this bit, all the rest is important. Get this right. The rest is much easier. Really much easier. Get this right. So in groups of three, you have a wee bit more than 10 minutes. So, how did the discussion go? What came out of that? I tend to put a bit of discussion and question and answers in when I teach. Because otherwise I don't know where people are. I really don't. Otherwise it's just me blah, 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 blah. I haven't got a clue. So it's important for me that you do discuss it, and for me to get the feedback, usually. So what type of things were coming up in your discussion?
Well, we three were responding very differently.
What?
All three of us had a very different response.
Okay.
So it was interesting to find out that.
Yeah, it is. How we tend to think is, this is normal, this is how people will react, this is how things are. And then somebody says, really? Well, I got this, that, and you go, what? It's quite good to know that. It stops you clinging on too much to what you think is actually the only way, or kind of permanent. Other people will think that. So that's quite useful, that other people respond differently.
We seem to agree quite well,
don't
we?
Yeah. That can happen. Not really. All of it can. All these different variations. So, what type of things were coming up? Anything at all? How did you find the meditation itself? Was it useful? Not useful?
Yes, very, very useful.
Reasonable. Straightforward. Simple.
Found it quite liberating.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's how I feel about that type of meditation. Certainly. Mm. But you can see how it can affect people differently, can you?
Yeah. Well,
our attachment to things came up a lot, didn't it?
Yeah.
Our homes and
Kate and I had a big attachment to
places, in my case.
Uh-huh.
And
the biggest attachment of all?
Sorry?
And the biggest attachment of all?
To ourselves.
We tend to leave that to last, or as an add-on, but really. And then it's mine. Mine. And most importantly, not yours. It all comes from this.
We did have a question, actually,
oh,
which was when we were asked to think whether there was anything that was permanent.
Any condition phenomena.
Oh, any condition phenomena, yeah. Right. Because we were saying that when you had, you know, taken us, had asked us to imagine everything here and everybody being impermanent and it sort of dissolved away, and we all had quite a really good feeling of sort of being one and connected,
mm-hmm.
momentarily. And we wondered whether what that is.
Ooh, it could be different things for different people. Whether that was felt, the feeling.
Well,
will that feeling always be there, do you think?
Not that feeling, but...
Emotion? Thought? Idea? If you say what it is, instead of this, you know, because we tend to sometimes get to a kind of mystical stage. I'm not very good with that, I have to say.
Right.
Me and mysticism do not do well. I agree it's there, okay? But I'm from the school of say it straight or walk it crooked, right? So, what you're thinking here is a thought, an idea, an emotion. Are they permanent?
No.
No. So you've answered your question.
Okay.
No problem. No problem. Anything else come up?
No,
well, I'll take that a bit further after coffee. Just look at what's permanent, what's not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably quite helpful. Okay.
It was, you know, what was something was the last question. So I mean, it's just like it's like I tend to still think in terms of Buddha nature.
Oh yes.
As being something that is permanent, because it's. You know, it's love, it's compassion, so it's sort of permanent, but the only way I can get around it not being permanent, because I've been told I can't think of it as being permanent,
is we talked about.
I don't remember, it was somewhere, it came up in Copan about, I think of Buddha nature as the soul.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. This is the problem.
Yeah.
It's the connotations that come with that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's the connotation that come with that. And there's nothing wrong with using the idea of soul.
Yeah.
You know, don't shy away from that. You know, even gods, there's lots of gods in Buddhism and Hinduism and all the other, you know. But what we're not seeing is a permanent, unchanging.
No, that's thing, where I got round.
Which is, that's right.
Change, because it's,
well,
it's in relation, well, it does, it's there, but it's, it works in relation to things.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, that was...
No, it is interesting. It's something that really needs to be thought about. Yeah. Anything else come up?
Yeah, I struggle very much to concentrate. My focus was impermanent, and consequently I kept beating myself up about it. And then I thought, well, you know, I was brought up in a fundamental Christian religion from a very young age, and nowhere was impermanence discussed. You know, it was like kind of you live your life, then you die, and then you're resurrected. Maybe you go one way or the other. And so, you know, I think that's just hardwired in me at the moment. Mm. So consequently, I'm just struggling a little bit with it.
Yeah. Then go more with the analytical stuff.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes when you're trying to change a habit or a deeply held habit, I'll say that more than a belief.
Yeah.
A deeply held habit. Sometimes it's better to go with the analytical more than the single point of concentration to start with. His Holiness often says that when you're trying to let go of a very strong habit, you're trying to learn something new, habituate yourself with sometimes, then analytical meditation becomes primary.
Right.
Because analytical meditation moves the mind from ignorance to wisdom, to understanding, a faulty understanding to a more wise understanding. So maybe go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, once you get habituated with that, then you can maybe slip in the single pointed.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome. Anything else?
I was thinking very much on in the same way as Jenny about the when you were. Is there anything that you can think of as permanent? And that was what came to my mind too, was the Buddha nature.
Mm-hmm.
And the teachings So I was the same thinking that same as you, Jenny. So we've got to have a discussion about what they said again.
I think it's a good idea, and we'll do this after the break. Mm. It's just, unfortunately, see, this was a weekend on emptiness. You know, the nature of reality, the two truths, and this, things like this. Then we can go into it a great deal. Mm. But it's not, it's on death, eh? I bet you're all sitting there going, when do we get to death? I know it, I can almost hear it coming. But you need this, eh? So I can't be taken too far along that road. But let's, after the break, let's just be clear about what's permanent and what's impermanent. And then that kind of rests the mind a wee bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not getting all the answers, but it gives you a criteria to check things against. And then you decide.
Mm-hmm.
Which is usually impermanently. Anything else come up?
Something came up for me in meditation. I had to think with of a building.
A building. That you're familiar with, yes.
And then it went down to dust, as it were. And it felt like it was more alive for that. I was quite pleased to be able to see it like that.
Okay.
But then, I can't remember if that was the next, that we did the same sort of thing with ourselves. We thought of ourselves as all myself as moving pieces, not solid.
Oh, yes, always changing, always fluctuating, yes.
And then, oddly, the building seemed to have to be solid. It was as if there's something in the relation of the two, isn't it? It's quite, became quite unnerving that it was all like.
It can be very unnerving, yes.
And it kept being this sort of trick, going backwards and forwards. Mm-hmm. You could do it with one.
Yeah. It's just getting used to it. And some meditations.
I'm curious because I hadn't expected.
No, and that's good. When something new comes up, that's very good. But be aware the meditations that we're doing now, there are many different types.
Yeah.
Some you'll find more useful to you than others. They're not set in stone. And a lot of people put forward meditations, and there's a rationale behind it. You know, there's a place you want to get to with this meditation. If you find by tweaking it one way or tweaking another, you can still get there, then tweak away.
Mm. It was like allowing something.
Yes. And whatever comes up will be worth looking at. Worth believing is another thing.
Yeah.
But worth looking at, certainly.
Yeah.
Because you see that, you begin to question things that you never question. See, it's not as if is that permanent or impermanent, that's permanent or impermanent. It's not like that. It's like we don't even think like that. We never question. Mm. Ever. We just react. Now you're beginning to, you know, you really want to question everything and believe nothing. Very helpful. Anything else come up? Okay, then have a break. Please take 20 minutes. It's 25 past now. Please take 20 minutes for your break. Toilet, have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or something. And I'll see you back here in 20 minutes. Thank you.